evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM HD1 Evanston, Chicago. I'm Nehayeta Vali, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, fencing, vaccinations mixed with comedy, analyzing radio series, and a Grammys recap. Those stories and more coming up from Northwestern University. This is WNUR News at 6. Ryan Fieldhouse was covered in fencers this weekend. With the flurry of pressure-packed bouts for Northwestern, Gabe Shumway has everything you need to know.
1 Ryan Fieldhouse, 3 weapon categories, 16 individual schools, and dozens upon dozens of fencers with swords clashing all at once. The Schiller Duels is the annual fencing competition hosted by Northwestern. This features 16 schools, many of which will compete all at once between women's and men's, set up on strips all across Ryan Fieldhouse. The event was 2 days of weapons clashing, strategic planning, and screams that came with major victories. The event is named after Lori Schiller, Northwestern's fencing coach for 39 years. Some hang up their swords after a career as illustrious as his, not Schiller. Donning a purple and white tie, Schiller still bleeds purple. And he was in attendance as a referee.
None of this would be possible without him, and Nate, keeping him involved and connected to the program, and that he's still in the sport in the way he is, it's special. And getting to honor him and spend time with him is great. He built this program basically from the ground up, and I'm very fortunate that he and Northwestern trusted me to try to build on that legacy.
That's Northwestern fencing head coach Zach Moss. He took the reins from Schiller in 2016. In Moss's time with Northwestern, a national championship was never in reach. This season is the first with individual championships for men's and women's. In the past, the winning team was always a combination of scores from men's and women's results. This meant that Northwestern, which only has a Division I women's team, could not win the championship. Until now. Moss's thoughts on a championship?
That's our goal this year and moving forward. So every year I've been here, the goal is let's take one step forward as a program, one step forward as a program. And our goal is to be fencing the best we can by the end of the season. And so let's learn throughout the season so we get there.
And after this weekend, the Cats looked like a potential champion. 12 duels, just one loss. This loss to Notre Dame has been a recurring trend for Moss and company. To Moss, this is merely a reflection of the excellence of the Fighting Irish program.
They have a depth of talent that is impressive, and then they also have an incredible ability to develop. I think when I started here, they were an aspirational program for us, and now they're a competitor.
One of the toughest parts of Notre Dame is its strong group of young saber fencers. Sophomore Magda Skarbankiewicz, who didn't compete against NU this weekend, won the NCAA championships last season. Siobhan Sullivan, also a Notre Dame sophomore, placed second. Northwestern had a strong contingent of first-year Sabrists in its own right last season. The difference this season, however, is Northwestern's addition of Sophia Szymanowicz. She shares the same coach as two Notre Dame stars, Skarbankiewicz's father, Adam. Dennis Kolakowski, a Northwestern assistant coach who focuses on Sabre, emphasized Szymanowicz's help in addition to the team's scouting.
So having Sophia come in with a lot of experience against them, that, you know, not just in competitive competition, but every day in practice for years, gives us that dimension. And even if Sophia is on the sideline, being able to give that information to her teammates and know what they're going to like to do.
The NU Sabre class combined for an 85-23 record over the weekend. With 12 duels in one weekend, the depth of options was on full display. The Schiller Duels also marked the final competition in Evanston for Northwestern seniors. With 7 seniors being celebrated, it was a full circle moment for many. Moss highlighted 2 in particular, Megumi Oishi and Karen Wang, who had a monumental impact.
From a results perspective, Megumi Oishi and Karen Wang, like the two of them, I don't know what, at this point, they haven't really accomplished. And that has set a bar that everyone else has strived for since the day they walked through the door. Everyone in terms of work ethic, camaraderie, support, team culture, like top to bottom, that quarter has just set a new standard for the program.
For Oishi in particular, she stands out on the strip. She dons a pair of gray headphones prior to her bout. After nearly every touch, a primal scream is heard throughout Ryan Fieldhouse. Oishi embraced the passion of the competition like no other on Saturday and Sunday. Kolakowski has worked with Oishi for years and had this to say about their time together.
I've watched her face around 500 competitive bouts in her career, from before she was here through her Northwestern career, for USA fencing tournaments, and it's not one memory, but it's all the things she's accomplished, and it's the constant passion, the creativity, the pure, like, energy she puts out on that strip. Like, you know, I don't know how she still has a voice at the end of the day, and how she hasn't stumped a hole through the strip yet, but, like, she's really a personification of will.
The fencing season is approaching a crucial stretch. In February and March, Northwestern competes in the CCFC Championships, the Midwest Regionals, and the NCAA Championships. The latter allows up to 6 qualifiers per team, 2 in each weapon class. In its quest for an NCAA championship, Northwestern is about to start a major gauntlet. For WNUR News, I'm Gabe Shumway.
School vaccination discourse might not seem like the fodder of a Tony Award-winning comedy, but Eureka Day is just that. The play is now making its debut in Chicago after years of theatrical success. Sophia Quesa sat down with the Chicago Productions director, Lily Ann Brown, to hear more.
Eureka Day, the smash hit satire, made its premiere in Chicago this January in a production with Timeline Theater Company in Broadway in Chicago. The show, written by Jonathan Spector, is a send-up of liberalism and misinformation, focusing on the progressive Eureka Day school, which finds its ideological consensus thrown into chaos when the mumps break out and a student vaccination requirement is proposed. This past week, I had the chance to sit down with Chicago production director and Northwestern alum Lily Ann Brown to talk with her about the show, her career, and her time on campus. Here is that conversation.
Starting first with Eureka Day. So this play was written in 2018, but it's gotten more attention in the mainstream in recent years, winning the Best Revival of a Play Tony Award in 2025 and receiving productions around the country, including now in Chicago. So, you know, as someone directing this play right now, why do you think this show has become more relevant or continued to stay relevant with audiences throughout?
I mean, it's a fantastic and wonderfully well-written play that is hilarious. I think that certainly it hit the mark. I mean, his play seemed almost prescient to people once we got into the pandemic. People were like, wait a minute, this was written before 2020, and they found it hard to believe. So I am not surprised that a revival or another production happened that was successful, because it feels extremely current.
This play, it is a comedy, it is a satire, but it also, you know, deals with things like vaccine discourse and also talks about things like misinformation. So through directing this play and working with the text of it, how do you balance the satire of the show with these real conversations that are being had?
Well, we live in a really absurd time right now, don't we? So I think it feels more real than anyone expects it to. It's funny how every single business comes up to me and says how it's relevant to their specific business, which is the mark of any great theater. In terms of rehearsing it and balance, we just tried to bring as much, you know, verisimilitude as we could to it.
Yeah, lovely. And so my next question was about this relationship with Timeline. So I know in 2018, you directed a production of Carolina Change that they co-produced. And so can you tell me a little bit about what sort of led to this re-team up with Eureka Day?
I think they were interested in the play, and I got a phone call asking me if I was interested in the play. And those are the kinds of phone calls that it's really, really wonderful to get when you have people who actually know you. So it's not sort of like a blind call because you are on a list of directors that it would be hot to get or whatever. You're on a list of people who are working a lot right now, or you're buzzy or whatever. Or I get a lot of phone calls because of that. I get a lot of phone calls because I'm black. I get a lot of phone calls because I'm a lady. I get a lot of phone calls because I'm a black lady. And they want me to do a black lady play. And this is not that. And so, but it's something that I really, really rock with. Like, I am a comedy person. I have a comedy education, and I really like doing it. But I don't find a lot of people with my identity in that space. And so it's nice when people know that that is a thing you do. And so you get that phone call. This happened because they actually know me, which is really cool.
You were a Northwestern alum and you were involved with student theater on campus here. And you work within the directing spheres, acting spheres as well today. Can you tell me, what's one lesson you learned here that you still are able to carry with you?
Oh, yeah. The biggest thing I think I learned at Northwestern is how to do it myself, which was absolutely necessary to us speaking today. I would not be here. I would not have my career if I did not know how to self-produce, because that ended up what I had to do to get my career. Can you go off into the world and like try to break into theater and immediately have access to hundreds of thousands of dollars? No, you will not be doing that unless you are the world's biggest nepo baby, which we got that too at Northwestern, so totally possible. And no tea, no shade. If you are the world's biggest nepo baby, hire me, please. But as a director, what prepared me was the much more like grassroots, the things that did not have hundreds of thousands of dollars in the budget. Like, I produced Ain't Misbehavin' in the Shack in 1995, basically by myself. Like, I paid for it with my money, like from, I had a little job. I was working at Limited Express on Church Street, and there had not ever been a black musical at Northwestern. And I just felt like I couldn't leave without this thing having happened, because I was trying to make it happen for 4 years. And I couldn't get any of the student groups to produce it. And I couldn't get anybody on the faculty to produce it. And I just couldn't convince anybody to produce it. So I was like, I think I'm gonna have to produce something by myself. And I couldn't afford Once on This Island with my Limited Express paycheck. I could, however, afford Ain't Misbehavin', and then a black musical had been done at Northwestern.
Thank you so much, and break a leg on the rest of the run.
Oh, it's lovely to meet you, and thank you for having me.
Eureka Day runs from now until February 22nd at Chicago's Broadway Playhouse. For WNUR News, I'm Sophia Quesa.
Caroline Davis didn't go to Northwestern, but when it came time for her to choose a forever home for her collection of self-taped radio broadcasts, she knew Northwestern's music library was the right place for her archive. Reporter Georgia Kerrigan spoke to Davis and listened back to tape from her radio series, Black Classical Composers.
In the 1970s, most radio airtime of black artists was for jazz, blues, soul, and gospel music. So, Carolyn Armenta Davis produced a series showcasing classical music, written by black composers. It aired on Chicago's former WEFM radio, and she recorded each broadcast. I spoke to Davis about her work, which is now housed in the Northwestern University Library's digital archive.
The Black Classical Composers program is presented by Commonwealth Edison. And now, here is Carolyn Davis.
Good evening. I'm Carolyn Davis, and during the next hour, we will feature the music of black classical composers.
I guess I'm 81 and three-fourths. When these were on the radio, I was 34 years old. I wasn't thinking about archives.
And now, pianist Natalie Henderis plays Baccarat and the popular Juba dance, which was named for an old African ghost, from the piano suite In the Bottoms by Robert Nathaniel Dett.
At that time, there was not any radio program on a classical station dedicated to Black classical composers from South America, North America, Europe, and Africa. This whole thing of wanting to have a narrow perspective, I found a little disappointing for me. They want me to talk about the same thing everybody else is talking about. I don't want to do that. Not in the same way. I made an appointment with Commonwealth Edison to talk about Black composers. The gentleman thought I was talking about jazz. And when I got there, he was totally shocked that it was classical music. And fortunately, he said, yes.
For WNUR News, I'm Georgia Kerrigan.
Awards season is officially here. Jessica Watts has your 2026 Grammys recap in this week's B-List.
Welcome to the B-List, your weekly roundup of celebrity mess and pop culture. This week, the 2026 Grammys recap. The 68th Grammy Awards took place last night. The award ceremony was hosted by Trevor Noah for the sixth and final time. The show featured performances from Lady Gaga, Bruno Mars, Lauryn Hill, and Justin Bieber, who notably was only wearing a pair of boxers on stage. The coveted Best New Artist Award went to Olivia Dean. The Man I Need and So Easy singer continued the 9-year streak of female Best New Artist winners. She was nominated against Leon Thomas, Addison Rae, Cat's Eye, Alex Warren, and others. Steven Spielberg earned his long-awaited EGOT last night. The director earned a Grammy Award for Best Music Film. Kendrick Lamar made Grammys history last night. He won 5 awards, making him the most awarded hip-hop artist in Grammys history. This title was previously held by Jay-Z. Best Rap Album and Record of the Year were 2 of his 5 awards last night. Billie Eilish took home Song of the Year for Wildflower. The song is featured on her 2024 album, Hit Me Hard and Soft, causing some eligibility confusion among fans. Billie Eilish was also one of multiple performers to criticize ICE and recent immigration enforcement during her acceptance speech. In the final award of the night, Bad Bunny made history for winning Album of the Year. Debí Tirar Más Fotos is the first Spanish album to win Album of the Year. Bad Bunny will also perform at the Super Bowl next Sunday. That's all for the B-List this week. Check in next Monday to hear about what happens this week in pop culture. For WNUR News, I'm Jessica Watts.
Taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe, the Evanston Fire Department announced the retirement of Captain Jason Hayes, making more than 20 years of dedicated service to Evanston and its residents. Today was his last day. In Chicago, the local groundhog Woodstock Willie predicted an early spring Monday, drawing a crowd from as far as Australia and Spain. Meanwhile, Gertie the groundhog saw her shadow, predicting 6 more weeks of winter. This weekend, protests erupted nationwide over the Trump administration's immigration crackdown, with demonstrators calling for an end to aggressive enforcement. A preschooler, 5-year-old Liam Ramos, and his father were released from detention after a judge's ruling. Demonstrations continued in cities like Minneapolis, New York, and Los Angeles. On the world stage, Israel has reopened Gaza's key Rafah border crossing with Egypt, allowing over 20,000 Palestinians to leave Gaza for treatment in Egypt. The crossing will be run by supervisors from the European Union and local Palestinian staff, while Israel will carry out stringent security checks remotely. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Tilly Freed, and our reporters are Gabe Shemway, Sophia Quesa, Georgia Kerrigan, and Jessica Watts. I'm Neha Yadavali. Catch our next newscast Wednesday, February 4th. Now back to scheduled programming.